Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 133 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, deep into the night here on this fine Thursday. It's not so fine, I suppose, and the fact that the Braves just got, not decimated, but beaten pretty soundly. And here to chronicle it all with me is the great Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
About as bad as a playoff game can go, other than a heartbreaker in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking before we started recording a little bit. It's a situation where this is preferable to blowing a game. I think, you know, having a game where the Braves didn't feel like they were really in it. I mean, there were moments where there was brief optimism, but, you know, no back and forth. Dodgers had the lead in the first inning and led the entire game. You know, it wasn't fun, to be sure. I guess there are worse outcomes and kind of what you said there, like maybe just collapsing late or something like that, but it wasn't a whole lot of fun. It's probably the best way to start off with that discussion.
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, and obviously we're not telling anyone that people didn't see the game for themselves, but to start the way it did, three pitches in for Fulte's night to give up a leadoff homer, it just kind of deflated the team a little bit, and we'll certainly go inning by inning, or at least big situation by big situation, but a pretty deflating night all the way around. And it is just one game, but obviously now you got to win 3 out of 4 against a very good Dodgers team. And everyone knew how good the Dodgers were. I know folks were talking before the game today. This kind of felt not a must win. Obviously not an elimination game or anything like that, but because it was Foltynewicz, it's hard to imagine the Braves now winning 3 out of 4, but stranger things have happened, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the series, there's a reason. We talked about this on the preview podcast with you and me and Eric. There's a reason the Dodgers were significant favorites in the series, and that's because they're very good. So the margin for error is already pretty small. And then once they announced that it wasn't going to be Kershaw in Game 1, you felt like that was a spot where the Braves, as you mentioned, not quite a must-win, but you know, this was what I said this immediately early on in this game. This was the one game on paper that the Braves had the advantage on the mound, and they clearly did not have the advantage tonight. Mm. But yeah, looking ahead, you know, it's anything can happen. But this was one that the Braves probably needed to get. So we'll talk about that and big picture stuff a little bit later. But I mean, you alluded to it. Let's just kind of go one by one, maybe not inning for inning, but just sort of the bigger stuff. Obviously, the leadoff home run from Jock Peterson. You know, a lot was made about Fulte throwing 3 straight fastballs in that at-bat because Peterson's one of the worst hitters in baseball against breaking pitches. You know, it's early in the game, so I totally understand why Fulte would be leaning on his fastball. That's kind of what he does. But at the same time, it doesn't look great in retrospect to give up a home run considering it was a high fastball that he basically just hammered. So, I mean, it's one pitch. And credit to Fulte. He got out of that rest of that first inning. It was not pretty by any means, but getting out of there with only one run was probably a good sign at that point in time. But what did you make of the early start stuff and really just Fulte in general, I guess?
Yeah, I'm with you. It was, you want to establish your fastball early, and it wasn't even like he threw one right down the middle. Looking at StatCast, I think it was just off the plate, actually, and Jock just hit it up in the air, and the sun was still out. And when the sun's still out in Dodger Stadium, the ball tends to carry, but once it goes down, the ball really dies, and it just kept going and going. I thought Ender was going to have it for a little while there, but it just snuck over. But I'm with you. In hindsight, sure, I'm sure he'd prefer to bounce a curve or a slider in the dirt instead of a fastball that was too hittable in the zone. But again, that wasn't as crushing, especially since Fulte was able to escape the first inning with just one run. We were talking, you felt like they were going to be able to escape a little bit and weather the storm, and it was just the one run. Obviously, things didn't get better as the game progressed, but it was nice to see him battle back a little bit and to get that strikeout of Puig with the bases loaded to give the Braves a little bit of hope. Obviously, it didn't work out, but it did give him a chance because things could have gotten out of hand in the first inning.
Yes, Puig swung. Actually, that's kind of a weird thing to say out loud. Puig swung at ball four, I thought, in that in that strikeout, but to kind of bail Foltell a little bit. But that was very nice. You know, I guess from there, you know, the offense we can talk about as much as you want or as little as you want. It was not a fun offensive night. There was obviously no runs. We'll talk about some specifics here in a second. But, you know, scoring no runs, I guess none of stuff would have – "quote unquote matter." I got a few tweets about that after the fact, like, you know, talking about the specific stuff that we were tweeting about, the strategic stuff. It's like, well, the offense has to score runs. I'm like, yeah, I understand that the offense, you can't win if you don't score runs. I understand that, but there were still some big picture things that were not great. Obviously, I thought the biggest pitch of the game was, well, this is pretty self explanatory now. I mean, the homer to Muncy is obviously the pitch. But the 0-2 pitch in which Folti hit Jock Peterson with two outs in the second inning was basically pretty self-explanatory, but one of those things where that keeps the inning alive. He walks Justin Turner, and then the three-run homer. And, you know, in retrospect, the game is basically over right then with Max Muncy going yard. So, I mean, I'm not sure there's much to say about that, but you just can't do that in that spot.
It was brutal. I mean, and not just – but after the horrible first inning, he gets the eighth and ninth hitters, I think, on five pitches. He goes 0-2 on Jock, and you're thinking, okay, you know, they're still down 1-0. You get this. I think he was only at about 35 pitches at that point. Then he loses control of a breaker, hits Jock in the knee. Turner reaches, and then, like you said, before you know it, it's 4-0. And the game wasn't over being the second inning, but it kind of felt like it was over, especially with as well as Ryu was throwing. And just kind of how the Braves have been unable to do much against the Dodgers, not just this year, but in recent years. It was a bad omen, and obviously, I mean, the one run was more than enough for the Dodgers tonight, but Muncy's homer really kind of broke the back of not only Folti, but I think of the whole team.
Yeah, Folti's reaction, you could tell he wasn't necessarily locked in there, and that kind of leads to some, you know, it's stuff that doesn't, again, I guess, matter that much because of the way that the game played out. But there were some questionable tactics in there, and that's something that we're going to spend some time on these playoff podcasts, because, you know, these are the decisions that end up mattering in the long run, even if they don't matter in the short run. You know, letting Mike Folsonavich hit in the third inning for himself and then taking him out anyway was controversial, to be sure. I guess there are arguments on both sides, and that you have this, you know, it's early in the game, there was nobody on, and you had an out in the inning. But Folti hitting for himself and then being removed was definitely not a normal thing that you would see in a game like that. What'd you make of Snicker letting that whole thing take place? Considering, I know they have the 5-man bench, but it's kind of really a 4-man bench, which I guess is the argument against that. But in retrospect, the Braves didn't use three of their bench guys. So, and, you know, looking back on the game, letting Folti hit for himself and then not using three of your bench players is not exactly the best look in the world.
Yeah, it was a little weird. At the time, I didn't hate it, just because, as you mentioned, Rene Rivera's on the bench, but other than an extra inning scenario, he's probably not coming off because they want to utilize Flowers of Suzuki, for better or worse. I mean, it's what they went with. We could talk about that ad nauseum, I'm sure. And if you're not going to use Suzuki in that situation, which you shouldn't with no one on in the third inning, and you don't want to burn Lane Adams, your only backup outfielder and best pinch running threat, in a game that was 4-0. I didn't hate it. Your only other real bat in that scenario is Eric, or I've done it twice now, is Ryan Flaherty.
Yeah.
Twice in 3 days I've called him Eric Flaherty. Ryan Flaherty, and, you know, make all the Ryan Flaherty jokes you want. I'm not sure using him there would have been that much more opportune than Folti. And because he is kind of the only backup infielder, I guess if someone was to get hurt, he would be your guy, and you don't necessarily want to burn him in the third inning for a pinch hitting situation. So I didn't hate it at the time. You're right. The fact they didn't use a couple guys on their bench makes it look a little funny a couple hours later. But at the time, I didn't hate it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the argument for what he chose to do. I don't agree with it. I do understand it. And it's part of the reason why, as you said, I don't want to belabor the point, but it's part of the reason why carrying three catchers really hurts you, is because you're basically doing that just so you're, you know, quote unquote, allowed to use, I guess, Suzuki in this game, whoever your backup catcher is later on. And Rivera is someone that you're just never going to use. So you're basically operating with a 4-man bench. And as a result of that, it makes it tough because you're not going to use your two best pinch hitters, who are the catchers. And then as you mentioned, Adams is your runner, as your pinch running guy later on in the game, and Flaherty's your only backup infielder. So now you have your hands tied. I mean, in retrospect, there probably is a pitcher on the roster that you would prefer to hit over Foltynewicz, who's a terrible hitter. But even then, like, doing something differently, I don't know. It's a rough spot. It's just a bad look. It's unfortunate in some ways in that the situation is just weird, but I still think you have to hit for him there. Probably with Flaherty. I mean, it wouldn't have been this fantastic option because Flaherty isn't very good. But yeah, that's just a weird one. It didn't end up mattering, obviously, in the grand scheme of things, but it doesn't look great in retrospect. You know, moving on from there, we don't have to spend too much more time on that. In the top of the fifth, the Braves got two on, basically had their first threat of the entire night after a singles by Ender and Charlie Culberson. And then they finally did pinch hit Kurt Suzuki, which was the right thing, at least in my opinion, that was the right decision and the right time to do that. A high leverage spot. He, of course, sees one pitch and sort of fists a fly ball to right field that was a routine out. But it sounds like you agree that was the spot to use Suzuki. That's what I thought, to be sure.
It was. I mean, the fact that he popped up a cutter or a changeup, whatever it was, that was a little off the plate and just kind of blooped it up in the air to right, which was obviously caught. It was unfortunate that really the only real rally the Braves had in the first eight innings was shot down so quickly. But again, just a frustrating night. And give credit to Ryu and the Dodgers bullpen. I mean, he was throwing strike one just about every batter. I don't know what the game ended at, but I think through the first seven innings, the Braves only had a 2-0 count twice all night, which is very, very good. There wasn't much they could do, and when Suzuki popped it up, you felt like that was really the Braves missed their chance. If he would have put one in the gap and cut the lead to 4-2, maybe it's a different game, but a frustrating thing to be sure. But to Brian Snicker's credit, he did utilize Suzuki at the right time there. It just didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted, even before the decision was made, I tweeted, this is probably going to be the highest leverage situation of the whole night for a pinch hitter, and it was. I mean, that was the biggest spot of the game, for at least from a pinch hitting perspective. He used the best option in that spot. It just didn't work out. It was not a good plate appearance from Suzuki, swung at the first pitch, and wasn't really a pitch that he wanted to be swinging at in retrospect, but that's just going to happen sometimes. It was a bad at-bat, but the right decision, even though it didn't work out. You know, on the bright side here, we'll spend, I guess, a couple of minutes just talking about the guys who were not faulty in this game. The only other guy that did not pitch well is Brad Brock. He looked pretty bad in his outing, but Sean Newcomb was great. Max Fried looked great. And even, you know, Venters and Sabathia at the end looked pretty good. You know, obviously a lot of that stuff was low leverage later on in the game, but especially Newcomb and Fried really came in and kind of held the line and gave the Braves somewhat of a chance. Obviously they never materialized, but some pretty important and quality innings from two guys who are basically starting pitchers operating out of the bullpen.
Yeah, you said, I mean, 3 1/3 innings, only gave up one hit, one walk, struck out three. As everyone kind of worries about Newcomb throwing strikes, and of course he came in when the Braves were already down 4-0 and was just pounding the strike zone. Fried looked really good, and Snit took him out after 18 pitches. I was a little confused by that, of course, for Brock, and I get it. I mean, you had two right-handed hitters coming up, though, one of which is Puig, who almost at this point notoriously hits righties far better than lefties.
And they actually both Puig and Hernandez, who ended up actually bombing on Brock, both of those guys had reverse splits for the year. You mentioned Puig. Puigs are like long-term splits. Hernandez, I'm not sure that's the case. I need to go back and look at that. But even for this year, both of those guys hit righties better than lefties, so that does not look great for your manager, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little confused. I know a couple people thought, well, maybe he realized that since Newcomb and Fried were looking good and they were already down 4-0, that you maybe don't want to burn Fried and not make him available for game two. But at the same time, of course, as you said, the reverse splits. Brock comes in, almost gave up a homer to Puig, and then gave up the long homer to Kike to make it 5-0. Not that another run made all the difference in the world tonight, but I think just from a mental standpoint, being down 4-0 is far different than being down 5-0. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but from an outsider, it just kind of seems that way. And you're right, Brock did not look good. And obviously now, because they had to use 5 or 6 relievers this evening, you hope that a couple guys are fresh tomorrow, because tomorrow obviously becomes a very must-win game if they want to keep their season alive.
Yeah, that's kind of goes without saying, to be sure. And, you know, I'll be interested to see how they handle it if they do get the win tomorrow, which is important. You know, when do you bring Newcomb back? When do you bring Freed back? How do you handle game four? These are questions that may not matter if you get swept. But like, there was a lot of talk, especially when Newcomb looked good in that first inning, on Twitter from people that we think are smart, talking about maybe you want to keep Newcomb fresh and maybe start him in game four. I think the plan, as soon as Newcomb entered that game, to me, I immediately thought, all right, Julio's supposed to start game four. As soon as they brought Newcomb in, that was kind of what I thought in my head. Maybe that was wrong, but I think you probably will see Tehran in game four. That's just a guess on my part, if game four exists. But that's just some interesting hypotheticals, because it did seem like Snicker had those guys on a short leash for a reason. I'm not sure what that reason is just yet, but I'm sure he probably has a rationale for it, because, you know, otherwise you would have kept Freed, especially in the game, longer, and probably even, I mean, maybe even Newcomb. I guess they had to hit for Newcomb, so maybe not. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do think if we had to sit in the post game meeting with Anthopoulos and Sned, I'm sure that part of it was, let's not totally burn Newcomb and Freed. Now, who knows? They always say everybody's kind of available in the playoffs, and whether or not they'll try to throw Newcomb or Freed out there again tomorrow if they need them, we'll see. But
I'd be surprised, honestly, with normally the guys who, especially Newcomb, guys who have just started for so long and haven't thrown out of the bullpen in a long time, 2 days in a row seems really weird. Like, maybe Freed has more recent experience in the bullpen, so maybe you might try that. But Newcomb hasn't thrown out of the bullpen since when? I mean, was the last time Newcomb threw out of the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, he threw an inning, I think, last Sunday. But other than that, that was his lone bullpen appearance, so...
Yeah, so it's a weird one. But, yeah, it's just something that we keep in mind. It may not end up mattering, but that was questionable is probably the word I would put. It wasn't necessarily negative.
Odd. Yeah,
yeah, just odd's kind of a good weird. Point. Yeah.
Because he was cruising. I mean, he had gotten 4 outs, and I think...
No, Freed looked great. I mean,
18 pitches or so, and even just talking about the future, I think with Freed, I'm still kind of fascinated by him. I think, and it's not like he has a bunch of elbow and shoulder injuries. He always seems to have the blister problem. Was his groin that he strained, like trying to get out of the way of a line drive that was hit back at him earlier in the year? I mean, they're not elbow and shoulder injuries. They're just kind of weird injuries that he always seems to be bothered by. Obviously, we'll talk about next year all we can, but I'm still pretty intrigued by him. And as we've seen, when he's throwing strikes, he can be really effective.
Yeah, he's got great stuff. There's a reason he was a first-round pick. Like, he's got, I think, a higher ceiling than people want to always remember. And Freed is someone to keep in mind, to be sure. One topic that we want to hit on real quick here, and that actually goes with – I'm following the press conference as we speak on Twitter, the post-game presser, just so we can make sure we don't miss anything here. And this kind of goes with that. There was the play in the sixth inning where Acuna reached base on the leadoff error by Machado, who, of course, the broadcast wanted to make it seem like they were like he was Andrelton Simmons defensively, which made me laugh a lot. But Acuna got on base and then had the strike him out, throw him out double play. And people were really kind of freaking out about Acuna, including me, about why he'd be running in that spot. It made no sense whatsoever. And actually, in the press conference after the game, Snicker is now saying that Acuna missed the sign and he was not supposed to be running. So that's unfortunate, because, I mean, it does make sense, because, I mean, I think we all kind of had that same reaction. Like, you're down 4 runs and Freddie Freeman's on deck. Why are you running? It was a straight steal, obviously, because, you know, Camargo was trying to protect and swung the bat. But any kind of movement there didn't really make sense. So I guess that explains it. But that was one. That was a spot that was pretty rough, too, when you have a fast guy on base, a little bit of momentum, no outs, leadoff man's on. You know, Camargo struck out anyway, but it was just that was a rough one as well.
Yeah, it was weird. It was a head scratcher, and it was kind of just a microcosm of the whole night for the Braves. Just a sloppy play, and just not a good play, honestly. And I guess it makes sense, because at the time, everyone was like, "Why in the world would you do a hit and run there? You're down by 4."
It just didn't make any sense at all. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I don't know. I was ready to
rant about it on this podcast. Now I can't do it because I saw that after. So my apologies, Brian Snicker, because I was going to blame him for that one, and it wasn't his fault.
See, we're fair to Snit. We don't always unfairly bash.
No, I mean, I tweeted before, like, I don't think he's good as a manager tactically. I think that's, I mean, my position is very well documented there. But I mean, I'm not going to kill him if we don't have to kill him. There were things that I thought he did poorly tonight, but that was apparently not one of them. So we'll hold back on that one. But yeah, that was rough. It was, again, it wouldn't have mattered. So before you want to send that tweet to me, I promise I understand it. They lost by, you know, 6 runs. But yeah.
Yeah,
anyway.
the timing too. I mean, it was right. It was the third time through the order. Acuna reaches. You think, all right, he's on. It was 4-0 at that point. Camargo, Freeman, Markakis, even if you can get a run or two, just kind of chip away if the bullpen can hold things. Obviously, that didn't happen. Obviously, the bullpen didn't hold it, but a frustrating thing. You talked about Suzuki's pop out earlier in the game, kind of deflating their sales. I think that kind of deflated the Braves' final sale, and it didn't help that the next inning, Kike hit the homer to make it 5-0.
Yeah, and that's basically like where I almost want to not do any more like play-by-play, because there really wasn't anything that was terribly interesting after that. No. You know, we mentioned Sabak and Venters getting, you know, they got four outs, and that was fine. They both pitched fine. There was a couple walks from Sabak. Obviously, he didn't pitch great. And by the way, 8 walks for the Braves pitching staff. You just cannot do that.
We've talked about it all season long. Pitches. Yeah,
you just can't do it. I mean, and by the way, the Dodgers did not have a single walk in this game. The Dodgers pitching staff combined for 11 strikeouts, no walks, 6 hits. Obviously, Ryu was fantastic, but even their bullpen guys would give up 2 hits. But other than that, like, they were lights out, and it's an oversimplification to talk about how good they were, but they just were, and the Braves weren't in this game and in really every way.
Friend of the program, Joe, mentioned the Dodgers only had 5 hits, only 1 single all night long, and it was
The Braves out-hit the Dodgers tonight in this game.
Yeah, and Ryu, the opposing pitcher, had the only single of the game for the Dodgers. They had 3 homers, a double, and a single, which is pretty crazy, but that's what they do. They hit homers and they limit your base runners, and that's kind of been their formula all year long.
Yeah, I mean, if you were trying to be really positive, you could probably find a scenario in your mind where that's a good thing, and that, you know, it's only a pitch here, pitch there. It wasn't like you just got bludgeoned, you know? But at the same time, yeah, it's kind of the formula, and it's one of the reasons why I couldn't really figure out why people wanted to play the Dodgers and not the Rockies. That was an opinion that existed. I never understood it, to be honest with you. The Dodgers are just kind of scary good in a lot of ways, and I don't think you could necessarily predict that Ryu was going to come out and just dominate the way he did, but everything else that happened was pretty predictable. Max Muncy's been incredible this year. He had the 3-run homer in this game. Justin Turner is good at baseball. Reach base 3 times. Jock Peterson, you know, is capable of hitting a lot of home runs. He's got a lot of power. This is a lineup that's really deep. Their bench is very deep. In fact, they didn't really need to use it. That's one of the things that we talked about on the preview, is that the Dodgers' bench is so good, they didn't even need it in this game. Like, it didn't matter because they were winning. So, I mean, they only used, I think, 1 pinch hitter. Yeah, it was David Freese. Everybody else hit for themselves. And obviously, again, that kind of ties back to the pitching being so good. They didn't need to pinch hit for Ryu at any point. But, I mean, yeah, it's kind of a perfect storm, and it doesn't look great for the future of the series. I guess we've probably covered all of the actual decisions that were made during the game that were at least of any interest. There were a couple of overreactions that I wanted to address. I mean, I think these are pretty common sense, to be honest with you, but maybe you saw something else that I didn't see too. There were some people that were actually literally questioning starting Mike Voltanovich in game 1 of this series, as if he wasn't by far the best pitcher for the team this season. Did you see any of that, A? And B, how insane is that take? Because it just was driving me insane.
A little bit. I mean, people are going to get frustrated whenever you have as poor of a start as they did tonight, and I get it. I mean, I do.
What are you going to do, though? Like, you have to pitch your best pitcher.
Absolutely the starter. He was the best pitcher all year, and he has to learn. I mean, I think it's easy to forget that, 70% of the team tonight played their first playoff game? I mean, we could probably go through it and count, but it's probably pretty close to 3/4. Especially with the starting rotation and a good chunk of the lineup, there's a little more experience in the rotation behind Folti. Julio's made a playoff start, and I don't know if Gausman has or not off the top of my head.
I don't think so. I mean, and really, even in the lineup, it's basically just Freeman, Markakis, and maybe Flowers. Everybody else, I guess Culberson was on some of those teams, but you know, he was in a much lesser role. And it's a situation where this is a team that has a ton of guys in a new spot, and you could see what they're, I guess the question coming in was how they were going to handle it, whether it would be the, you know, bright-eyed youngster be terrible, or the guys who just are kind of just too young to understand. And you were hoping that was going to be the case, and it looked for a lot of the game like the spotlight was pretty bright, honestly.
Yeah, it was. And you're playing in front of 55,000 people at Dodger Stadium. They're going crazy. You're down 4-0 about 20 minutes into the game. Like, I get it, and you have to learn. I mean, it's a young team. It was the youngest team in baseball at the All-Star break when you looked at rosters and everything. So, I mean, they're going to take their lumps. It's a good experience. You hope that Folty learns from it because he's obviously going to be somebody the Braves are counting on for years to come. And you know, guys like Albies and Acuna and Camargo didn't have great nights. But again, it's their first playoff appearance. There's a reason why you generally don't see teams with a bunch of super young kids make deep runs in the playoffs. It's a game where veteran and experience counts. That you obviously have to have talent, like the Dodgers have plenty of. But the Braves were a little deer in the headlights tonight, and hopefully they move on. It was just one game, and you hope they can at least, even if they don't win tomorrow night, at least put up a little bit of a fight and put some runs on the board against Kershaw and everybody else.
Yeah, and the other brief overreaction that I wanted to address was there were some people complaining about Tyler Flower starting against the left-handed pitcher when he has a slash line of 348, 511, 606 for the season against lefties. Like, he's been incredible against left-handed pitching. And I know he struck out 3 times and didn't look great, but, like, what are we doing here? This is a pretty simple one, too. Like, I understand Kurt Suzuki has been good at times, and they're kind of interchangeable in a lot of ways, but let's not be silly at this point.
Yeah, I'd say. I mean, you only have so many options. And
have
yeah,
some
you
have common
to ride
sense.
With the guys,
so, yeah. So, you know, I don't know if you have any more takes on what happened tonight. Obviously, we can look ahead a little bit, but anything that you wanted to get out there that you saw tonight or that you took from tonight that is sort of instructive moving forward, do you want to move on to the rest of the series?
I think we've kind of hit it. It was a frustrating game from the beginning. And again, as we said, it's just one. They obviously need to win tomorrow because winning 3 straight against the Dodgers is going to be really tough. And maybe Anibal can work some veteran magic. But, yeah, just not a fun game. And not. I think we've kind of hit on everything.
Yeah, and speaking of Friday's game, and of course, it's now Friday on the East Coast where I am. It's not quite Friday where you are. But I just checked the betting markets, which are often, you know, sort of, I don't know what the word is, I guess reflective of what people's expectations are and all that fun stuff. The Dodgers are a very, very, very large favorite on Friday. They're -228, which is the biggest spread by far on the board for Friday. And Friday is one of those days when all four games are being played in the playoffs. Of course, a lot of that's Clayton Kershaw because Clayton Kershaw is very good at baseball. Actually, before they announced that Ryu was going to start game one, Kershaw was a pretty significant favorite over Foltynewicz as well. And the Dodgers were still favored in the game on Thursday, but not quite as big. And now, not a ton of respect for Anibal Sanchez. So, I mean, for those of you that don't know a lot about betting, -228, you're talking about a situation where, I don't know, the favorite team would be seen as winning 70% of the time, something like that. I have to do the math in my head, but yeah, it's a spot where it's not going to be, at least on paper, the best spot for the Braves. You know, Anibal's been good though. So, I mean, where would you peg the chances if before I told you that number, what would you have said when you're talking about percentage chance to win in Los Angeles? We're definitely guessing it's baseball, but what would you say the optimism level is for Friday?
That sounds about right. I mean, it's going to be a tough game. Kershaw, even with his back problems, and he's not the same guy he was 3 or 4 years ago, but when he's right, and he seemed to have shaken a little bit of the playoff jitters recently that he suffered from early in his career. I mean, when he's going right, he's as good as any pitcher on the planet. Anibal has been good. He's been incredibly consistent this year. He's rarely just lights out dominant, but more times than not, he's given up less than a couple runs on the mound. And you hope just the bats can pick it up a little bit. I mean, even if Anibal throws a gem, you have to score a little bit to support him. Maybe they'll have some luck against Kershaw. But it's going to be a tough game. And again, just the Dodgers are so good. This is not a case of the Braves not playing well. Yeah, they didn't play well tonight. But it'd be one thing if they weren't playing well against a team that was not very good or was kind of over its head a little bit with their regular season performance. I mean, I think you can make a decent argument the Dodgers are one of the top 3 favorites, maybe top 4 favorites to win the World Series this year. So I'm not super optimistic going up against Kershaw in Dodger Stadium tomorrow night. But again, who knows where things happen, and maybe they'll get a couple balls to land and get on Kershaw early.
Yeah, and that's probably the recipe. If you're looking for optimism, Kershaw wasn't great down the stretch. You know, six starts in September, ERA nearing four. In his final start of the regular season, he actually got shelled a little bit, allowed five runs in five innings, which is very, very bad for him. That's about as bad as it ever gets for Clayton Kershaw. You know, again, he's even when he's struggling, he's still a pretty good pitcher. But you know, if you combine, you know, I think people want to think back to the last time that the Braves faced Kershaw in the playoffs, and it was the Freddy Garcia game, and he kind of outdueled him a little bit. Anibal's been pretty good this year, so if he comes out and throws what he's capable of doing, and you rough up Kershaw a little bit, the playing field levels. And the Dodgers, while they were good in the bullpen tonight, haven't been great in the bullpen this season. So that might be their biggest weakness at this point in time. I would argue that it almost certainly is. So if you can get there in a tie game or within one run, the Braves have been very good this year about, you know, kind of pulling games out that they probably shouldn't win. So maybe you get one of those and swing the momentum and all that fun stuff. You know, it's an uphill task to be sure, because Kershaw gives you just such a huge advantage on the mound. But if you can get to him, at least force him into the bullpen early, somewhere in the fourth, fifth inning, would be interesting to see what happens from there. Because, you know, the Braves bullpen isn't great, but it actually might be better than Dodgers, depending on how you want to look at it. So that's probably the recipe, even if it's not one that seems overly likely. And I did check the odds, by the way. It's about 69.5%. So that's kind of where we want to be. So 70-30, I mean 30-70 in baseball isn't the worst thing in the world, but that's just kind of what it is at this point in time.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
It is.
As we've said, this is not a bad team. Dodgers are incredibly talented, incredibly deep. And we saw a little bit of it tonight with just some of the talent they could bring off their bench and the way they match up and everything like that. I guess if you're looking for a positive tonight, they did have to dip into a couple of their relievers for a game that they won. 6-0 Dave Roberts, oddly.
Including the great Alex Wood.
Yeah, pulled Alex Wood after he gave up a kind of a soft line drive and a ball that just the first baseman couldn't field. Went out and pulled Wood to get the final out of the game, which is fine, whatever. I mean, I guess better safe
than sorry.
That's just
a move you do because you don't want to like let the snowball roll down the hill kind of thing.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
It was two outs, which is why it was a little bit weird. Like, if there had been nobody out, then you definitely do it. But two outs, it's like, really, you're up six. I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, but I sort of understood it, even if it's probably not the best move, I guess, tactically. Mm-hmm.
And it's not even like they had to burn Kenley. I forget who they brought in for the final out, but it wasn't Kenley. It wasn't Maeda, one of their late inning guys generally. So,
Oh, by the way, one more note just to pour it on for Braves fans a little bit. This actually came from Jason Foster of Sporting News. The Braves are now 0-7 in game one of the NLDS since 2002. Game one has been a house of horrors for the Braves. And, you know, on the bright side, a couple of those series were, you know, the Braves haven't won them, but they took it to like five games. I remember being in the building in 2003 for game five. So, you know, there's a lot of these spots where the Braves have been able to bounce back in game two. Their record in game two is actually quite good in the NLDS. You know, trends don't really matter, honestly, in the big picture. But if you're, again, looking anywhere and everywhere for optimism, that's probably a spot to find it, is that they've been pretty good in game twos. That's, again, you're just shooting bullets at this point in time, but we're trying.
Yeah, it's we're making the most of it at 12:30 Eastern time after a 6-0 playoff loss.
Oh, yes, 12:30. And listen, at least it wasn't a long game, because Friday night's game, I will say right now, I'm going to be in quite a mood if they lose in ugly fashion on Friday, because it will be probably like 2 a.m. Eastern, I would imagine, because it's a 9:40 first pitch or whatever it is Eastern.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you know it's going to go like tomorrow's going to go 13 innings.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be 3:30 in the morning, and you'll get the best version of me. And I don't think it's going to be Scott tomorrow. I'm going to give Scott the night off. But one of those things where we'll have to maybe patch you in is like you'll be the only person awake in the world. But, yeah, it'll be fun. We'll see what happens, and hopefully it's a much more upbeat podcast. We're talking about, you know, matchups for Monday and Sunday and Monday and all that fun stuff. By the way, the one other announcement, I guess, that took place maybe during the game or maybe just before the game, the Braves, are if this thing gets to game four, it's going to be a 4:30 local start on Monday for game four.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a nightmare over there at SunTrust Park. I might try to brave the festivities and get over there, but man, it'll be rough. The 1:30 start for you is brutal, by the way.
Yeah, I didn't want to watch the game, so it's cool. 1:30 afternoon.
You'll be at the office dialing it up on whatever it is you can dial it up on. But yeah, my apologies to everybody on the West Coast. I know you and Joe are out there, and there's others that are Braves fans that are going to be dealing with some stuff on Monday. So hopefully that game happens. But if it does, there'll be some viewing challenges for everybody.
Yeah, kind of weird, but I'm guessing I think Monday you get Yankees Red Sox, which is obviously going to get prime time.
Prime time game, yep.
And I'm guessing even Cleveland and Houston is probably a little bit of a bigger draw too. So I get it.
And the Braves were due for one of these, by the way. I mean, for instance, tomorrow the Brewers are going to be playing at 4:30 again. They're playing two straight afternoon games. That's the least appealing series, so I understand why. But Colorado and Milwaukee started in Milwaukee and they're playing in the afternoon 2 days in a row, and the Braves just pretty much couldn't because of the fact that they're in Los Angeles. They'd be playing, you know, noon first pitches, which they're not going to do. So that's the reason why the Braves even only have one of these. But
Cleveland and Houston is the early game, which is kind of, I mean, the defending world champs. And I think Cleveland, who people are sleeping on a little bit, they didn't have a great regular season, but they are very built for a playoff series.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, starting at 11 o'clock local, or I guess that's noon locally and 2 Eastern. So that was a little bit of a surprise. But as you said, everybody has to play at some point. You can't exactly have the Dodgers play a game at 10 o'clock Eastern.
Yep, that's just one of those things that has
to happen. Or 10 o'clock locally, I should say.
Yeah, I got you. All right, well, Scott, please fire anything else that you want to. But otherwise, I will bid you adieu, and hopefully you'll be back with another playoff podcast, because that means the Braves are still winning. But
hopefully we score.
Scott. Follow Scott on Twitter.
Hopefully not another shutout, and they make it a game again. I mean, they had an uphill battle to begin with, but they can make it interesting. Maybe steal one in LA. I mean, if they could steal one tomorrow night, all of a sudden you have a chance to win the series at home. Yeah. If you lose tomorrow, it's more will they even get to a game four than just you're just kind of in survival mode at that point. Then.
I think the series betting price, if the Braves were to lose tomorrow, will be the Dodgers will probably be like 10-1 favorites. I'd imagine something like that. Like it will be, you know, if the climb is uphill now, you'll be looking at a basically directly up if you lose tomorrow. So it's very self-explanatory. But
with Walker Buehler and Rich Allen, I mean, we're going on and on and on about how good the Dodgers are with reason. But if they don't win tomorrow, I want to say the season's over because weird things can happen. But they need to win tomorrow if they're going to make this a series.
That's a good place to end it. Thank you, Scott, for joining me as always, man. We'll talk very, very soon. As for everybody else, please subscribe. We will have a podcast for better or worse after all these games. So we'll see you guys late on Friday night, which is going to be Saturday morning. But until then, stay tuned and keep the faith. We're almost there.